Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Monday, February 7th, 2011. Tech News Today is brought to you by MailRoute.info. MailRoute is a secure hosted service that provides enterprise-grade virus and spam filtering to companies of any size. Try it right now absolutely free at MailRoute.info. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And joining us today in place of Darren Kitchen, who's out sick, is Ayaz Akhtar from This Old Nerd, as well as PCMag.com.
Hey, everybody. How's it going?
Or This Old Geek, should say.
Nerd. No. It's all nerd.
Nerd. Oh, he's got This Old Geek up on the...
Somebody fix the lower third.
That's someone else's website.
I'm fixing it right Stop now.
Stop it.
Please, it could be like, sold nerds.
Oh, that was sold nerd.
ThisOldNerd.com.
Yeah, ThisOldNerd.com. Sorry about that, I asked.
Or sold nerd. I mean, the possibilities are endless.
All right, let's start out with a story submitted by GWhipped on Twitter about the Facebook secure settings. We talked it last week about how you can now go into Facebook and automatically force it to give you a secure connection every time you connect to Facebook. Turns out that Jeremy over at pskl.us found out that if you go to an app that doesn't support the secure settings, it will say, hey, you want to play Scrabble? We can't display this content while you're viewing Facebook over secure connection. To use this app, you'll need to switch to a regular connection. Press continue. You press continue. It takes you to the app. Everything's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But it has now turned off your secure connection. And when you go into your settings in Facebook, the browse Facebook on a secure connection whenever possible is unchecked.
Well, but you unchecked it.
You didn't. You pressed continue.
But it told you what it was going to do in order to allow you to continue.
That is a fair comment, but this is my problem with it. It didn't say, to use this app, you'll need to switch to a regular connection, and you will be on that regular connection from now on.
Or, yeah, you'll need to revisit your settings when you're done with the game.
Because this says, you'll need to switch to a regular connection, and the setting says, browse on a secure connection whenever possible, which implies, when it's not possible, you'll be off the secure connection, but then this should still be checked.
It should be treated like a Wi-Fi network where you say, remember this network, and it'll just connect automatically unless it's not possible.
And the next time you go to a page that does have a secure connection, you should be forced back into the secure
connection. Is that just like an oversight on Facebook's part, or is it impossible for them to be switching back and forth between secure connections and unsecure connection app?
Google Reader actually switch back and forth all the time, or like different web pages? Like anytime I browse the web, I'll see that like this is not secure, this is secure, and it'll go back and forth. Mm-hmm. Facebook looks like they were trying to do something nice. They didn't implement it 100% correctly. And this warning should be changed a little. They should change that text. To use this app, you'll need to switch for good.
Yeah.
It seems a little bit harsh.
Yeah, rather than just continue says like, oh, okay, use this app, you'll switch to a regular connection. I guess it'll take care of it for me.
I think... the problem is that even if you understand, I mean, we're all talking about, so this is what's happening, and that's kind of bad user experience. But for most folks, at least people who are accessing games, is it just apps? Outside apps? Are there any other Facebook pages that'll dump you off of the secure connection?
Jeremy found it worked on a Scrabble app. Yeah, you know, and I tried it on an app as well.
Right.
Those were the only situations that I came across.
A lot of people are playing app games participating in apps within Facebook. And a lot of those folks don't really necessarily understand the difference between secure connections. And so, even if they checked it once, they won't realize that they haven't been on it for the last 3 weeks.
That's a really good point. Is like, first of all, the fact that you had to go way in deep into the settings to set it up in the first place means most of those people you're talking about never set it up. But even if they did on the advice of someone, they have no idea that it's now unchecked.
Right.
That's horrible.
Nobody wants to go into Facebook settings. I mean, that's just an unpleasant experience.
Yeah.
That's
like watching a Super Bowl halftime show or something. All right. Big news today is America Online is buying the Huffington Post. The two companies completed the sale Sunday evening, made the announcement at midnight Eastern time. They had an interview with Carl Tara Swisher from All Things D. We saw both Arianna Huffington, who is the person who founded Huffington Post, along with Tim Armstrong, CEO of AOL, chatting it up, looking like friends, and rightly so. Arianna Huffington just got $315 million, $300 million of it in cash, the rest in AOL stock. She is now going to take control as president and editor-in-chief of the newly created Huffington Post Media Group, and most of the reports say she is now going to be in charge of editorial for AOL, which would imply she's Josh Topolsky at Engadget and Mike Arrington at TechCrunch's boss now.
Yeah, and that is, it's sort of like, I mean, to be in charge of all content across all of AOL's editorial platforms, especially when they're most likely going to be acquiring more, that is almost hard to believe because it's quite an entity. And Huffington Post has had a lot of success in one arena, but is she really qualified to run content for Engadget, for example?
Yeah.
Is it like a figurehead position?
I get the feeling this might be a little bit of a ceremonial editorial position.
Yeah.
Not and maybe figurehead is too harsh of a word, but in other words, it's a position where she said, look, I'm not coming into AOL as anything less than in charge.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, fine, we'll put you in charge. Topolsky and Arrington are still going to report to their various group heads.
Right.
But you will theoretically be in charge of the content. And I've seen this done before where you bring in somebody as, say, a managing editor or an editor-in-chief, but they actually don't have any direct reports.
Right.
And they end up being in charge but not managing on a day-to-day level.
And without knowing really the details of what happened behind the scenes, I could see this being part of her acceptance of the deals. Like, I'm not reporting to anybody here.
Yeah.
This is the kind of position that I'm going to have if we're going to go forward with this. If you watch the video on All Things D, you know, for the most part, it's them, you know, they're smiling and they're shaking hands and saying how happy they both are and that the visions coincide with each other. She mentions like a minute 30 into the video that Huffington Post has always been looking to get more into the video space, which I was sort of like, okay, well, I don't really know what that means. AOL and Huffington Post neither really like stand out for me as like big, you know, video content providers. Maybe that's part of the vision going forward. But, you know, she also recognized that Huffington Post has, up until now, been seen as a liberal site, a left-leaning site. That's why a lot of people like and dislike the Huffington Post, but certainly why their fans go back and they have, you know, such a high read rate. So they've both recognized that, you know, AOL is not trying to just become this liberal media entity. So does that make the Huffington Post, as we know it, more of just a center, not really leaning either way, which would alienate some of the people that love the Huffington Post for what it is? I mean, did they just buy something in order to change it and ruin it? Possibly.
Quickly going back to the AOL video point, AOL actually does aggregate a lot of videos. I know that when you want to publish anything, AOL is one of the places that you can do that. Back to the whole political aspect stuff, I was taking a look at the New York Times piece, and Huffington herself said that she wouldn't politicize the other sites like Engadget and everything else. But I wouldn't expect them to change what's working with Huffington Post at all. I'm figuring that, you know, they're leaving TechCrunch the way it is, probably, with Arrington, you know, saying what he says. And then there's Huffington Post saying whatever they want. I'm pretty sure that the AOL front page probably won't be saying the same stuff that you'll see at the Huffington Post. I mean, don't forget, like, Miramax was owned by Disney, so you can have lots of different, you know, wholesome images and also still have this really hard edge at the same time.
The report from Peter Kafka on All Things D says that they're going to make $50 million on Huffington Post in 2011. That's $10 million on sales of over $50 million. So they're expecting it to provide them a lot of revenue. And let's talk a little bit about this strategy of AOL's to be the conglomerate of successful blogs. They're certainly buying the right brands. They bought Weblogs Inc., which doesn't just get them Engadget; it gets them a whole series of sites. They bought TechCrunch, also gives them a series of sites. They bought Huffington Post, one of the biggest names in political and news blogging out there. They should go buy Drudge next. And then just have the whole party there.
We represent all ends of the spectrum here.
Gawker
at AOL
is now one of the only big independent blog consortiums. There's lots of blogs out there, But Gawker sort of stands alone at this point. In fact, Nick Denton's response to this was, that's idiotic. We won't ever sell to anybody.
You think that's an idiotic thing to say because...
No, he said it was idiotic Huffington Post to sell themselves to AOL.
Gawker just went through a big redesign this weekend as well, which does away with the ValleyWag arm of Gawker. You can still switch back to the classic view. This is totally off topic.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, it's the way, the direction that they're moving in.
Yeah, a lot of people are hating on that redesign.
Yeah, they are.
You know, I think that AOL is doing the right thing as far as building, like, the power blog company. But I don't know if being the power blog company saves AOL.
Well, if they make their stuff exclusive, right, maybe they won't be taking 80% of their revenues from people who are still using them for dial-up or something. They'll actually have some kind of exclusive content that you're not going to be able to get anywhere else. I mean, if that whole daily method works out for News Corp, I mean, could you imagine seeing any of this content in a application that costs money? I mean, a lot of this stuff could become exclusive. They're probably like that freemium kind of model. I think AOL's surprisingly becoming relevant, which I'm quite actually excited about.
That sounds to me like a good way to kill your audience, though, if you make stuff exclusive. Then,
well, I'm not saying that 100% of it will be exclusive. You're going to have some parts of it.
One of the key things that they want from Huffington Post is that ability to just perfectly execute on SEO. A lot of the articles that are put up on Huffington Post really aren't even political, but they are like, what time is the Super Bowl on? And they grab people off of search engines and bring them in the door.
Maybe they can use that expertise, you know, and bring it into their other elements to AOL's content. I mean, and Gadget obviously is really great at this. Huffington Post has been really great at it with their all caps headlines. So we'll see it elsewhere, I think.
A lot of bold typeface. You know, it's worth mentioning that some of Huffington Post's most respected writers are not paid employees of Huffington Post at all. You know, $315 million is a lot of money for a lot of bloggers who aren't going to get a dime.
Maybe that's how AOL expects to save money. They're just going to take the HuffPo model and not pay anyone ever.
Well, yeah. I mean, if they get enough page views, then people will buy into that because it's exposure. I know that's how Huffington Post got around criticism of that. It's like, hey, you're getting so many people are reading your stuff, you're getting good exposure, and you can move on from there. So people do it because they'd rather be on Huffington Post than stand in unity against it, but just a lot of money for a few people.
The security firm H.B. Gary Federal announced on Saturday that they had uncovered the identities of several members of Anonymous, and they were not going to make them public, but they would be going to a conference soon and presenting how they found them out and being able to show that this, you know, nothing stays anonymous on the internet, and we could help the FBI in their investigation into attacks against companies. So yesterday, Sunday, Anonymous unleashed their anger on H.B. Gary Federal, a security firm, compromised the company's website, put up a notice of their own on the company's website, gained access to documents that H.B. Gary had collected on its members, published more than 60,000 of H.B. Gary's emails to BitTorrent, and also vandalized the person, Mr. Barr, who is responsible for the hack, vandalized his Twitter and LinkedIn accounts with racist messages, harsh messages, and personal data about him, like his social security number.
And his home address.
He's
the CEO. I mean, it's sort of like, whoops. I mean, if you're the CEO of a security firm, you would think that you wouldn't have the same passwords for your email and your Twitter account, assuming that that's how this all worked out.
You know, some of us can play and some of us can only coach.
Right.
Those who cannot
tweet.
Teach. And really, that's what happened. Somebody not following their own advice. And really, really embarrassing for a security firm like that to be owned in that way. H.B. Gary co-founder and security researcher Greg Hugland talked to Krebsen Security and said basically they broke into one of H.B. Gary's servers that was used for tech support, and they got emails through compromising an insecure web server at H.B. Gary Federal. They used that to get credentials for Aaron, who happened to be an administrator on our email system. which is how they got into everything else. So, you know, it's a case where hackers broke into a non-important system but were able to leverage that to move sideways into secure systems.
And the moral of the story, again, is if you're going to investigate Anonymous, don't tell people you're going to do it. Or you're going to say, oh, we have information on them and we're going to release it. I mean, they are known for hacking things and they're going to come after you. I mean, like, I know I've been very careful when I write anything about these guys or say anything about them because I like my systems fine. Please.
You know, another thing to note is that they apparently published a lot of these internal emails because they were like, a lot of this stuff is wrong. They're just wrong.
Yeah.
We don't care. I mean, we wouldn't be publishing them about ourselves if we were compromising our anonymity. So
yeah.
They don't know what they're doing.
They made a big deal about how what they had found out about the members of Anonymous was not anything you couldn't have found out in their public IRC channel.
Right.
Which means that they didn't have any secret files. And so they're like, we're going to take all that stuff and send it to the FBI forum. Now yeah. They won't be able to get paid for it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's take a quick break and thank our sponsor, MailRoute.info. If you would like to protect yourself from spam, whether you're an individual or a business, MailRoute provides protection for one user, 50,000 users. It doesn't matter. Protecting you from spam and viruses, MailRoute is a secure hosted service that filters out all the bad stuff. Whether you're a single user or a company, it can eliminate viruses and spam, reduce the load on your email server, lower your costs, and make your email usable again.
Yes.
If you run your own domain name, if you've run it for a few years, you know how unusable it gets, because just having the domain name means every spam list in existence tries every variation on an email address they can come up with. I mean, Ace Detect is one of the most ridiculous usernames ever, I use it for everything, and it's not spelled the way it sounds. And yet, when I had Ace Detect at sabrilliant.com, I definitely got spam to that address without using that to sign up for anything. They just do an alphabet replacement on any possible username.
Yeah, they don't care. They don't care what Ace Detect means.
How are you going to stop that if you're on your own domain? Well, you can't stop it, but you can filter it out. Try out MailRoute at MailRoute.info. It will clean out the bad stuff. It will only send you the good stuff. No false positives. Small business accounts start at $2 per user per month for 10 users. And because of demand from the Twit Army, MailRoute has added a new service for individual users, less than $30 per user per year for single users. Give it a try for free. You get 10% off the lifetime of your account, MailRoute.info. We thank them for their support. BlogPocketLint.com says they have a source at ViewSonic that not only will ViewSonic be putting out a brand new Android phone in April, but it will have Android 2.4. And here's the interesting part about this. That will apparently supersede 2.3 and still be called Gingerbread.
Now, wasn't Gingerbread 2.3 the version that a lot of Android devices weren't getting updated to, and people
right.
were wondering, what is the problem? Why can't we all be on
about.
The same page
exactly.
about this?
This may be why. 2.4 will be called Gingerbread, and the only major difference between it and 2.3 will be support for the dual-core apps that are meant for Honeycomb version 3.0, so that they will be able to run on single-core devices running 2.4. And Ice Cream Sandwich will still be 3.1. And there's some speculation that that means that we will have a difference between 2-dot releases and 3-dot releases. 3-dot releases will be meant for tablets. 2-dot releases would be meant for phones going forward.
Can we talk a little bit about Ice Cream versus Ice Cream Sandwich? Because I've been seeing it reported both ways.
Yeah, people are shortening it to Ice Cream, but I actually did a search to double check this. Andy Rubin said the full name is Ice Cream Sandwich because they make a statue for every version of Android, and the ice cream statue would look too much like the
froyo.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay, well, good. So it's Ice Cream Sandwich. Anyone who says ice cream, you're only going to be adding to the confusion that so many Android users know and love. Already.
You could just label the two if you want to call it ice cream. But the other thing that's interesting about the story is the fact that, well, maybe this explains why nothing has 2.3 and we've never seen it. We've only heard about it. But that means that theoretically when Honeycomb comes out, this should come out around the same time. So the applications will run well on either one, right?
Yes.
We mentioned last week that Wael Ghonim, a Google executive who is in their marketing department in the Middle East, was missing in Egypt during the protest. It was determined that he was arrested by Egyptian authorities, and he was released from government detention today. And we now know he was a very key member of the Egyptian organization online in organizing protests through Facebook and other places.
Yeah, in fact, much more so than I knew. I knew that he was missing and that he was suspected to have been detained. The last thing that he wrote online was at his personal Facebook profile, which said, "I said 1 year ago that the internet would change the political scene in Egypt, and some friends made fun of me, smiley face." He disappeared the next day. Mm. So, you know, there was obviously people put two and two together. But it turns out that he was very active politically, especially as far as protesting the Egyptian government, and was running a Facebook page that had to do with Khalid Said, who was the name comes up a lot because it was a blogger who was beaten to death by police, and you know was one of the catalysts.
It was a rallying point for the protest.
Yeah, exactly. He had a Facebook page, sort of in this man's name, that was actually taken down before the Facebook page that most of us associate with a lot of people knowing when protests would be and what time things were starting. It was kind of an organizational Facebook page for people to visit that had 400,000 members or so. He actually had a Facebook page that was very similar that Facebook had taken down. I guess it had violated terms and conditions. I'm not really sure how it was different from the Facebook page that continues on to this day. But anyway, the point is that he was very active in this whole movement. And there was also some question this morning. Some folks said he has been released. Other folks said, no, he hasn't. The government says they're going to release him. His brother said, no, he hasn't been released. So it's a kind of a good indicator of how sometimes Twitter can, I mean, it's great because it's up to the minute, but it's not always fact-checked, and you just get
a lot. It's not fact-checked at all, right?
Well,
some people do. It's all sources.
It's a lot of retweets of things you have to know to be true.
Yeah. You have to know who your source is if you want to be careful. He tweeted from his Twitter account 4 hours ago, 5 hours ago now. It just changed right as I was looking at it.
Wow.
Freedom is a bless that deserves fighting for it. Hashtag Jan25. He has a BlackBerry, by the way. Huh. Use Twitter for BlackBerry to do that. So
he's the marketing director for Google Middle East, and is based in. I'm not sure if it's Egypt or Dubai, but I think there's some of the areas that he covers.
He's over the whole region,
right? Yeah. The whole region. And it just I question. Some folks have questioned. It's like Google obviously is at least as companies go is known for the power to the people, kind of, human rights activism. A lot of people would associate at least some members of Google with that. But would his very active and vocal political activism be any sort of issue with company policy?
I guess
I don't know.
Google's not responding to anything like that, so it's hard to say. But it is unusual to see a marketing director so politically active.
Right.
It's also an unusual situation.
It's an unusual situation, and I think a lot of this has come to light because of the situation in Egypt, because he works at Google and is a prominent figure there, and because he was detained. So a lot of this may not have been noticed, or at least not as closely otherwise.
All right, let's move on to a dispute once more against the idea of allowing anyone to register a top-level domain. Right now it's .com, .org, .info, country codes, things like that. There has been a plan for a while for ICANN to allow anyone to create a top-level domain and register it. It's called a generic top-level domain. You'll hear it referred to as a GTLD. These are things like it could be .music or .coca-cola or, there's all kinds of ways. We've talked previously about how the MPAA wants to make it more difficult to get one of these. In fact, they want it easy for them to object. Their example being, what if a BitTorrent group decided to register the top-level domain .music? And ICANN has said, look, you can't just object to someone else getting a domain because you think that it's bad that they got it and you don't. Our guidelines say that if you want to object to a generic top-level domain being distributed, you have to show that it would be detrimental to the entire internet community for them to have this domain. MPAA doesn't like that because they feel like that's too high of a burden.
Right.
Now, the United States is getting in on the business, saying that they are proposing that the government committee, the GAC, should be consulted on every generic top-level domain. And if opposition is voiced by one or more GAC members and not objected to by other GAC members, that TLD would be rejected. So make this clear. The GAC is a group of governmental organization representatives.
One.
Yeah. And most countries have someone sitting on this. They are used as an advisory committee. And that's what GAC stands for, Government Advisory Committee. They don't have any power over ICANN. This would give them their first actual veto over it. And what the U.S. is saying is, this way, it won't be ICANN bowing to pressure from one country. It would be the entire GAC. That's how they're trying to spin it. The entire GAC. And if one member of the GAC objected, but then another member objected to that objection, then ICANN could resolve it. But it essentially gives veto power, because with diplomacy, if a country objects and the other country's like, well, it's not really worth it to piss off Saudi Arabia this
week.
Right.
We don't want to object to that objection.
They don't want .gay to be registered. So we're not going to object to their objection, and that, boom, that's done. ICANN can't do anything about it.
I just don't see how anything's ever going to be pushed through, because someone's always going to object to something. I mean, any global organization with people representing different ways of life and cultures, you know, there would be definitely certain countries that wouldn't want .gay. I mean, the U.S. might not be one of them, but if we're not going to object, then that possibly, you know, who had a good quote, information studies professor, Milton Mueller, he works at Syracuse. He said, if governments, so we're just using the .gay domain as an example, if governments believe that gays or other controversial ideas have a right to express their identity, they wouldn't make their ability to get a domain name reflecting their identity contingent upon a review by a world government committee in which some members are definitely sure to be hostile to their culture and lifestyle, which is true. I mean, it doesn't really make sense. It's like, you just, it would just be sort of the spinning wheel where nothing ever happens, because people will always be objecting.
Yeah, politicizing this is really going to stop any progress. And to put in an application to actually get one of these GLTDs, it costs $185,000. So there's a high, you know, cost to entry into this thing. But to take the other side real quick, I mean, theoretically, doesn't this make it a lot harder for like countries to just rip out part of the internet? So let's say that I'm in some country and I don't want anything from .gay showing up. I can just say block this TLD. Now this makes it a lot harder, because now you have to like actually go through each site, or you have to look for keywords and stuff like that. I mean, does that argument make any sense to anybody?
Well, yeah, it makes sense to me. It's a, you know, I don't think that's the way ICANN wants the global domain system to work. And that's, in fact, one of the proposals the United States is making, is to say this would stop that from happening. We would break the DNS if everybody just decided to block whatever top-level domain they didn't like. This way, we assure that all top-level domains will be universally accessible.
Yeah, that's why, like, I don't really know where this is going to end up. I mean, if they do politicize it, like Sarah was saying, this is just going to slow everything down. But then again, there's lots of .com names out there still, right?
Yeah. Well, I was looking forward to a rhythm and blues-oriented top-level domain, marvin.gay. Others like that.
Well, we have .co now.
We do?
Isn't that the big GoDaddy thing, .co?
That was a big GoDaddy.
Oh, but
ad.
That's a country code. Mm-hmm. GoDaddy does that all the time. It's like .tv. It's really Tuvalu, the country of Tuvalu.
What is .co?
I don't know. I know
.co.uk, but what's .co?
I think it's like Croatia or something. Oh, Colombia. It's Colombia.
Colombia.
Thank you, chat room.
Mm.
All right, finally, Sprint is on stage with David Blaine holding his breath, looking like he has indigestion, and having a goldfish coming out of his mouth.
We get it, David Blaine. You can hold your breath a really long time and probably have some sort of a tube.
I'm reading this directly off the live blog. As we're recording this right now, David Blaine is sitting in a cube underwater at a table in a suit with a wine bottle on the table. He is holding his breath and looking like he has indigestion, but it's just a goldfish coming out of his mouth, says Maggie Reardon from CNET.
Why is there a wine bottle? Did I miss that part?
Well, you know,
just for
if I'm sitting in a
just to kind of keep
cube
the
of water
the
when
mood,
I finally come
romantic.
Out, I'd like to have a
I
drink.
See. Ah, yes.
Anyway, so the performance is just getting underway. The announcement is coming shortly, and it is going to be, I'm just going to go on a limb and go with all of the leaks. The Kyocera Echo was leaked on Sprint's site earlier today. It will be the first dual touchscreen smartphone, smashing the last barrier between you and the ultimate mobile experience. It has a unique dual touchscreen that pivots on a hinge, giving you all the space you need to run the apps that connect you to the people and information you need every day. So the idea is you can have a 4.7-inch display made up of the two pieces, or you can fold it on a hinge and use each smaller display independently and run multiple apps on the two different displays.
So you
certainly
could,
an industry first, like they promised.
You could be playing a game and reading your Twitter feed simultaneously. That's a bad example. You could only do so much at once.
You could be doing. You could be playing a game, like reading a Twitter feed. You could be sending a text message and talking on the phone.
Watching.
You could be
a live
surfing
video.
The web and making a call. No, it's the EVDO. It's a CDMA network.
You could be watching David Blaine holding his breath and responding to your mother's email about dinner.
You could be watching a video and checking your email.
You could be watching TNT and be in the chat room at the same time.
Boom.
See that?
Now we're talking. I like this Echo.
Tom, you were excited about the Echo when rumors of this device came out at the end of last year.
It was pretty intriguing.
Yeah.
I want to see it in action again. But
this is not anything.
You know what it is? It's funny is when the Echo was first announced, it kind of came out of nowhere. I was like, that sounds amazing. That sounds cool.
It sounded different.
When they said, this is an industry first, we're going to prove that the impossible is possible, and David Blaine's going to have a goldfish come out of his mouth. And that sort of set the bar a little higher. And I'm like, so it's just the Echo? I mean, the Echo is pretty cool.
I feel like it sets the bar lower because they're trying to offset the fact that it's not that interesting of a spectacle because they have somebody holding their breath and goldfish and wine bottles.
He's blowing smoke bubbles now.
That's what I'm saying. He is now the attraction, right?
Yeah.
So they're announcing is kind
the
of
real thing.
Just the icing on the cake of some magician, whatever.
He's reaching for the wine bottle. you're gonna find out.
What will he do?
We'll check back to find out what David Blaine does with the wine bottle. But first, the news fuse. Nokia makes a big announcement this Friday at their capital markets conference. Speculation has involved a partnership with Microsoft. Mass firing of executives. Not firing squad, but just like letting them go. Now, well-placed sources tell The Register that Stephen Elop, CEO, is considering shifting the executive center of gravity of Nokia to Silicon Valley, creating what's called a virtual headquarters in the United States. Most executives would be forced to spend the majority of their time traveling outside of Finland, and the move would be as radical as any of those made by his predecessors in the company's 150-year history.
I kind of suspected this would happen. We'll see.
But he's not actually moving the headquarters. It's virtual.
They're virtual headquarters, but I think it means that he wants to spend a lot more time in the States.
Yeah, he just wants to be home.
Yeah, he's the boss. Mozilla is planning to release four new versions of its open source browser by the end of the year. That means Firefox 4, Firefox 5, Firefox 6, and even Firefox 7 are all slated to ship this year, 2011.
Wow.
Mozilla was originally planning on having just Firefox 4 by the end of last year, but it had to delay the release, and now four versions. Let's hope they can keep to it.
Mozilla release schedule.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Like that's going to happen. Yahoo's latest plan to save itself involves personalized content. According to two reports today in the New York Times and Wall Street Journal, the company will unveil a platform at the Mobile World Congress next week that will let both Yahoo apps and those of third parties show users different content depending on their behavior and stated interests.
Woo! It's just what I wanted in 1999. Last.fm says it will now require a monthly subscription for access to its music via mobile and home entertainment devices. This applies mostly to Last.fm's personalized radio stream, which creates a station based on your preferences, including what songs you've listened to most often and rated most highly. So nothing's free in the streaming music world anymore.
Bummer. I like Last.fm, but I don't know. Telcos may lose one plentiful stream of government money. How, you say? Well, the FCC is planning to overhaul the $8 billion phone subsidy program to include funding for broadband in undeserved communities. A vote on an order tomorrow that will open comments for revising the Universal Service Fund, or USF. FCC Chairman Julius Genachowski outlined his proposal in a speech today. He's not a football
Should Apple publicize their succession plan so investors can better assess the future prospects of the company should Steve Jobs leave the position of CEO? Well, Apple does have a plan. They just don't want to make it public. Compare that to a global survey of 1,300 companies by Korn Ferry that found only 35% of companies have a succession in place.
HP wants to fight Gorilla Arm. The company revamped its touchscreen all-in-one desktop PCs with the ability to lay them almost flat, dare I say, tablet style. The new TouchSmart 610 announced today, set to ship later this week, is built around a 23-inch 1920 by 1080 display, usually mounted upright, all monitor iMac fashion. But the new TouchSmart can also recline from upright to almost flat.
If you're considering getting a Verizon iPhone, listen up. Verizon iPhone goes on sale this Thursday for $200 and $300, although existing customers with fewer than 20 months done on their contract will have to pay $650 or $750 respectively. It's actually cheaper to cancel. So here's the math. Transfer your number to Google Voice for $20. That cancels your contract, and then you pay a fee of $135. And then on February 9th, you buy an iPhone on a new contract and pay a $35 activation fee. That would make the 16-gigabyte phone cost $390, saving you a whoppy $260 if you're willing to go through the trouble.
I might actually do that. And let's wrap up with the rest of the Apple news and rumors. This is like a mini news fuse. The first Verizon iPhone showed up on doorsteps today, 2 days early. A shelf tag for a white iPhone appears at a Best Buy in Houston. Several rumors indicate the iPad will come with NFC, a carbon fiber body, and a 7-inch version. Analyst Ezra Gothel is sure the iPhone 5 will be announced June 6th. Well, there's a shock. Mac Rumors reports Apple may stop selling box software in its retail store soon. And finally, iOS 4.3 is rumored to arrive February 14th, Valentine's
Woo!
Day.
Look at that.
Yeah.
Rumor palooza. All right, let's finish up with the ability to get free Usher when you're at the library. And I do mean the guy who sang during the Super Bowl halftime along with the Black Eyed Peas.
You could hear him.
Sony Music Entertainment offers the company's music library to libraries through a service called Freegal. And it allows the library to pay for a license, and the patrons can come in, download songs from Freegal, and keep them un-DRM'd.
And who funds libraries? Why? It's all taxpayers.
Yeah.
So wait a second. We're paying for songs that we might not like for other people to download from libraries.
Oh, yeah, well, that's true. The books, too, I guess.
I guess that's true.
But you just don't get to keep the books.
Right.
The problem with the MP3s is you can't return them, really. So they just say you get to keep them. Sony has struck deals with 310 libraries that range from $1,000 to six figures, depending on how many songs they want to download. Mm-hmm. So patrons are often limited to how many songs they can take. Libraries are limited to how many songs they can take. New York Public Library launched it last month. Other big metro areas include Seattle, Minneapolis, Portland, Nashville, Las Vegas, San Jose, Salt Lake City, Denver, and Orlando. The happiest place on earth.
Even though the selection might be a little bit weird with Kesha and Usher, but this is actually surprisingly forward for a music company to actually give music away for free.
Well,
this is kind of neat.
It's basically a hugely expensive all-you-can-eat subscription service.
Yeah, that you already opted into, so why not?
Yeah,
just put everything on there. I'm already paying taxes. Why not? Give me all the music for free.
For example, Baldwin Public Library in Michigan has about 30,000 residents and told Patch.com it pays $17,500 for an unlimited license that offers members of the library three downloads a week. So the license is unlimited for the library, but then they limit how many songs individual patrons can get per week.
Well, go on down to your local library and get some music. Get out there and download.
Free.
For free.
And
the libraries are libraries are cool again.
The libraries are cool.
Yeah.
And this is a cool service. I think it's overpriced. I think the libraries are getting shafted.
Mm.
On to the calendar.
WikiLeaks Julian Assange prepares to fight extradition to Sweden. It's kind of a bigger story. It's not just Sweden. His lawyers are worried that Sweden will lead to then extradition to the U.S., which could even lead to ending up at Guantanamo Bay. So He's trying to stop it before it gets going. Best Buy is opening up in-store pre-orders for 4G HTC Thunderbolt. So the deal is that you have to pay $50 to pre-order, which we assume will go towards the at least rumored price of $249 for the phone itself. So I don't think that that's a rebate. I think that that's probably just your deposit. T-Mobile's offering all of its phones for free on contract this weekend, or at least the phones that are already in its stores, like the MyTouch 4G, HD7, G2, and Vibrant. You have to sign a new two-year deal, but if you're looking for a new phone, you're a T-Mobile customer, free phones all weekend. That's a pretty good deal. A Best Buy ad has priced the Motorola Zoom at $800, and it affirms that it will be launched on February 24th. $800 is too much.
Still have
about $799.99.
They still haven't allowed anyone to get their hands on this thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like anyone besides Google employees or Motorola employees.
Yeah.
Like, why are they, if they're going to ship it at the end of this month, if this is true, which we don't know, this is a leak, but why wouldn't they allow a single journalist? Are they trying to build up the hype or are they worried about something?
Yeah.
I mean, I know
if this happens in movies, it's usually.
It's like when they don't let the critics pre-screen movies before release, it's because they don't want anybody to say anything bad about it. Not that that's the case here, but it is weird.
Yeah.
It's a weird tactic.
Another conspiracy theory is that Google is like stopping Honeycomb from getting out just yet. Maybe that's not fully baked either. So they might be telling Motorola to keep it quiet.
It's not good for the Zoom either way.
Sony Ericsson makes Xperia Play official in a Super Bowl commercial. If you were watching TNT on Friday, you actually saw it here. The full launch is coming February 13th. And now I know we were not alone in thinking that the commercial was very creepy.
Yeah, it was.
The sewn thumb didn't go over well with the American public.
Eileen looked at it and she was like, that makes me not want that phone.
It's scary.
Yeah.
It would scare children. Children, you know, you don't want to give children nightmares on Super Bowl Sunday. The Nokia E7 starts shipping to select markets. Latest version of Symbian, 8 megapixel camera, 16 gigabyte memory, nice, pretty aluminum body, slide out keyboard. People say that the screen's really nice. So if you're interested, It's new and it's cool. It's coming to a theater near you.
Dan Hess finally got up on stage, kicked David Blaine off.
Oh, yeah?
And announced with some Kyocera executives the Kyocera Echo, costing $200 a year, as we described it earlier in the show with the dual screens and everything. They're also talking about Sprint ID packs, packs of apps that are sold for Sprint devices. So you can buy your own crapware if you want. I don't know what's in them. Maybe it's not crap. But, yeah, so there you go. Kyocera Echo.
So it's
$200, not bad.
It's what everyone thought it would be. And there was a fun David Blaine, whatever, fish wine breath holding.
Fish wine breath holding, exactly. All right, let's move on to the voicemail. 260-TNT-SHOW. We have a caller who has pointed out a difference between Tech News Today and News Corp's The Daily.
Hey, this is Jim in Connecticut. And I don't know what episode number. The biggest difference between the Daily and the TNT show is the TNT show is free. The Daily, they're expecting us to pay for yesterday's news when I can go into the internet and get it all for free. Thanks, bye.
There you go. I mean, other than listening to ads.
You're paying for the convenience of it being packaged nicely for you.
That's right. You know, we have ads here on the Twit Network, but you don't have to pay. That's the trade-off. The Daily is both.
Has both.
Ads and, yes, it's an inexpensive 14 cents an issue, but it's not free. So there you go.
Finishing up with some email, TNT at twit.tv. Joe from Grand Rapids, Michigan says, I was in a room of non-tech people watching with the game when the Zoom commercial came on. This is the one we showed on Friday with all of the people in white walking around. Obviously a slam on Apple. Joe says, no one in the room even understood what they were advertising and were still confused until I explained the ad. I think they failed big time. Maybe they should just stick with talking about their product and not their competition or customers.
He's not alone. I was at a Super Bowl party yesterday. There were some technically inclined folks there, as well as some non-technically inclined folks. And pretty much nobody in the whole party had any idea what that ad was supposed to be.
Yeah.
We all just... I mean, I knew. I kind of was like, how's this going to go over? Will people laugh? And everyone was just like, what? Why were they in white lab coats?
Yeah.
Nobody got it at all.
I had the same problem with the Justin Bieber Ozzy Osbourne commercial, which was marginally clever.
And they said he looked like a girl. That got a laugh.
And I knew it was coming.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew it was about Best Buy. But when the commercial was over, I was like, wait, what was Best Buy advertising? I can't remember. And then it took me a minute to process. Oh, right. It was supposed to be about their buyback program. And then it all, like the whole like 5G, 6G. It's like, oh, tech moves so fast. Here's your insurance again. But it did, they didn't make it clear. And that's the problem with these Super Bowl ads. Like, they get so clever sometimes, you actually obfuscate the product you're advertising.
Yeah. I mean, in the case of the Best Buy ad, you said, what were they advertising? And I said, Best Buy. But that's, I wouldn't have been able to tell you anything more detailed than that. I just knew that it was a Best Buy ad and that they put some celebrities in it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I think sort of inside jokes about the old Mac ad from, you know, the 1984 type thing and throwing it back in Apple's face is like way over the heads of most people who are watching Super Bowl ads.
Right.
You know, and is you that really effective?
Out, you can't go out. Not only can you not even go out and buy that product yet, you can't find anything out about it.
Talk about confusing.
It's not been officially, you know, they haven't officially given it a date and shipping time.
If there's not a real product, spell it out. If you're going to pay all this money for a Super Bowl ad, spell it out slowly. Or people are like, I don't know, there was a lab coat commercial. Yeah. It didn't make any sense. That's the end of that.
On to Justin from Oklahoma.
Justin from Oklahoma says, hey guys, for the last couple weeks I've heard TNT talk about the George Hotz jailbreaking the PS3 and Sony's stink over it. And I've always sided with Mr. Hotz. I'm an avid gamer and owner of a PS3 myself. For the last month or so, I haven't really played my PS3 thanks to WoW Cataclysm until tonight. I started playing Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 and I was shocked by the antics in multiplayer. Players were jumping 100 feet in the air. They were changing the clan tags of other players, even killing players before the game had even started. Realizing the game was hacked, I went online to investigate, and I found that the jailbreak Mr. Hotz made public enabled these game hacks. Here's a link from the game developer Infinity Ward stating what's going on. He adds a link we could put in our show notes. He says, hey, I'm all for open access to hardware, but is there a way to do this without hackers taking the fun out of gaming? I empathize with him. That would suck if you want to play a game a certain way and people are just abusing it.
Yeah, but couldn't he just play with a group of his own friends and make sure they all, I don't know, have a little code? We don't actually want to use the hacked software and firmware, that is. I mean, couldn't you just solve this by having more friends?
What if he doesn't have a lot? What if he, okay, whether or not he has friends aside, what if he just likes to play with strangers? I mean, are you kind of SOL if you're just going to open yourself up to whoever might play, whoever might not play by the rules?
Does anyone know for PS3s, can you actually choose your server so like you can actually avoid one of these things? Because I know, I guess for PC gaming you can, but I don't know how it works on PS3s. Anybody know?
I bet the chat room would know. I don't know.
Yeah, Fopo Gijo is saying play on the PC, use dedicated servers with admins, and then you're done.
There you go. So you don't need friends, you just need a PC. Solved.
There you go.
All right, and aloha, Tom. Yes, we did break the news about Sprint's new Echo phone earlier in the show. Sorry you missed it. All right, that's it for this episode of Tech News Today. We have to stop recording so we can put it out so aloha, Tom can go in and listen to us break the news. But Ayaz Akhtar, thank you very much for being on the show. You can find your work on PCMag.com, but tell them about the other stuff you do.
You can see the video show This Old Nerd, where I show you how to have the most tech-forward life. We have a couple episodes this month that are kind of holdovers from last year, but definitely check it out. Season 2 is coming once I finally find a place to live.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for watching. You can find us online at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, tnt@twit.tv, or give us a call, 260-TNT-SHOWS, the phone number. We'll see you tomorrow.